It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We all know that spring weather in Iowa can be unpredictable, to say the least, and sometimes that takes a toll on our home. This hour, we're going to talk about how to assess storm damage. How do you know when it's time to call the insurance company? And then what to do next after your home has been damaged? Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. Hello, Bill.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Sure, sure. When we brought the drill. Ooh. Bad sound.
Ready to take action right now.
That's right.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's talk about you. You're in a hailstorm. You're in a windstorm, something like that. You wake up the next morning and you think, I better go take a look and make sure everything's okay. And let's start with the roof. What are you looking for when you're looking for roof damage?
Well, most of the time what you'll look for, the easiest thing is because it's hard to be able to visualize from a yard, maybe sometimes the actual roof damage, unless it's real bad. The first thing you want to do is kind of look at, if you were up when this hail started, see what size the hail was. If it was, 3/4 of an inch or an inch, especially an inch or above, you probably have some damage anyway, and it, might save you a little time not having to crawl around and look if you want to look. But look where the downspouts. Just kind of go around the outside of the house. Look where the downspouts empty the water out into your yard and see if there's a lot of granules there, because most people in Iowa still have, the asphalt or fiberglass shingles. And when you get hail damage or sometimes real heavy rain even, what it'll do is it'll tear the granules off of the shingles, and then it'll come out, go in the gutters and then go down the downspouts and out into your yard. So as you're looking there, if it's just granules, sometimes that may just be stuff that from previous storms that was sitting in the gutters and finally had hard enough rain to wash it out. But if there's pieces of shingles, actual chunks that are there, that's kind of a sign, either now or previously you've had some damage. And if there's chunks of shingles there, you want to have it looked at anyway.
So even if you don't have, say, shingles blown off the roof.
Right, right, because a lot of times you don't. Because asphalt shingles inherently, especially here in Iowa, when they're laid down properly, there's a little kind of an asphalt strip that each layer sticks to the layer below it. So if you try to go up there and just lift shingles up, most of the time, after at least a year, they're very hard to pry up, especially when it's warm out. They're very sticky. When it's cold, they can kind of loosen them up. But they have a tendency to seal to each other. So a lot of times heavy winds, depending on the direction, may not pick the shingles up and tear them off. But when you have the wind and the hail, then you start seeing a lot of chunks of shingles laying around. But from the ground, pull out the binoculars and just take a look and see if maybe there you can see partial pieces of shingles laying. We have three-tab shingles, most of Iowa, and architectural shingles. The three tabs are what we used to see. You look on a roof and you have to see all these lines going up and down. The architectural shingles are a thicker shingle. They take hail a little bit better. They don't, have those lines. So sometimes it's hard to see if you have some damage, because if it takes a little chunk off of one, you really can't have anything to base it on. So you're going to have to, either you climb up on a ladder or have someone, have a contractor, roofing contractor that is very experienced, of course, in doing roofs and insured before he climbs on your roof. You want to make sure they're insured. But go up there and take a look. But a lot of times you'll see those chunks at the base of the gutters, or where it's a heavy rain, it'll go over the gutters. You might see them in your bushes. If you do see the chunks, even if you didn't have hail, you want to have that roof looked at, because once that chunk is gone, then you're basically exposed to the kind of the fiberglass mat that's underneath, and maybe felt paper, and maybe there's enough damage that actually now the water can actually go down and get to your sheathing that's underneath and then into your attic. And then we're talking, structural issues. Oh, boy. Yeah, you can get into it very fast, especially in valleys, where two roof sections come together. Sometimes that's where you'll see chunks, too, that maybe won't make it to the ground, depending on the pitch of the roof.
So these chunks that come off, would it be possible to look at your roof and not see that damage? Or,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, especially if it's the architectural, the heavier the shingle. That's why, like, okay, you know, we're supposed to be getting some rain, you know, tonight, tomorrow, whatever, and maybe some thunderstorms. So today, when it's still halfway decent out, I think I'd walk around the house, and the first thing, make sure that your gutters have the downspouts have the extension to shed the water, you know, away from the house, and look and see if there's any, you know, piles of granule there now or pieces of shingles there. So, because if you don't kind of, we'll call it a pretest, if you don't pretest the area around the house, you don't have anything to base it off of. You have to have a baseline. So walk around now and see what you have, and maybe look up on the roof. And if you do have a ladder and it's easy to get your roof and you don't, you know, you could safely climb the ladder, you know, take a look in your gutters and see what's there now so that you know where your starting point is. Because one thing that I keep thinking about when I'm going down the road is we talk so much about gutters and where, you know, they'll take the water away. But when you look at a standard house, we'll have a set of gutters. Maybe it's a ranch house that has a hip roof that so the water sheds on all four sides, let's say, basic house. All that water may come down into only four areas. So in an inch rain, you might have 2,000 to 2,500 gallons of water emptying out in your yard in only three or four spots. So you want to make sure those extensions are on there now while you're walking around the house to make sure that that water gets away from your foundation. But yeah, you know, a good walk around today would really help.
All right. Now, how about, let's say, your siding, because that's another area of the house that can really take a beating.
Right.
What are you looking for?
You're just looking for dents and maybe some, you know, paint chips off. Aluminum siding dents very easy. That's why we don't see a whole lot of aluminum siding anymore, because you can just lean on it. I used to say you could breathe on it and it would dent. The real smooth aluminum siding takes, you know, it doesn't take a half inch hail, depending on the wind, you know, to put a mark. And sometimes what you'll see a hit, and if there's a dent, then that's real damage. But sometimes it's, they call them spalls, is when the, you know, the hail's kind of a little bit softer. It's almost like just a real hard ice ball, basically. And you'll see a mark, but it didn't dent the surface. So there, you know, the insurance adjusters aren't going to pay you for cosmetics like that, because that could just be removed with washing. But you'll see the actual dents, and a lot of times if that dent hits the edge of that siding, it puts a dent in it. That was some pretty good hail. And a lot of times it's only maybe on one or two sides of the house. But you'll want to look at the siding and then around the windows. A lot of houses have very thin, we'll call it extruded aluminum or metal around their windows, and that dents very easily as well. So in some cases, you'll see a house that has siding with no damage, but the metal around the windows will be damaged. Like on a roof, too, you'll see these little 12-inch by 12-inch ventilation pods up on top of the roof where it lets air vent out of the attic. Some of those are plastic. Some of those are metal, and you can see a lot of damage on those occasionally with a set of binoculars as well. And it's the older the plastic ones get, the more brittle they get. So they may have been put on in a house that was built, let's say, in the 70s, and it doesn't take a whole lot to break those now because ultraviolet lights broke them down. So you may not have any damage on your shingles, but you may have damage on, you know, the attic vents.
All right, and so you could have damage on your windows too,
sure,
without being able to see a crack or anything like that.
Yeah, and you know, in some cases, a friend of mine, their vinyl siding, I mean, it looked like you took a shotgun to it. It was just holes everywhere. And the downside, though, with siding, is usually they're not going to replace all the siding on your house. On roofs, you know, depends on your coverage. They may only do the sides of the roof that had the actual, that the plane of the roof was into the wind and into the hail. They may only replace parts, you know, whole sections of the roof, not the whole roof. On siding, in some cases, it depends on your coverage. They may say, okay, we're going to cover this portion of the house or this. Well, as soon as you put vinyl siding or steel siding up, the sun starts working on it. In a couple of days, it's not even going to be the same color. It doesn't matter if you save a whole bunch of pieces, throw them in your garage attic, and then, okay, I've got some damage. Now I can replace a couple of pieces. They'll look like a completely different color. So you want to be sure that when you're talking to your insurance agent beforehand, say, hey, you know, we're going to have hail damage sometime down the road. what's my coverage here? I don't want to have to just piece in one or two sections. The same thing on the roof. I don't want to just throw in a couple shingles. We're going to, you know, it almost gets to fisticuffs sometimes up on top of roof. Listen, bud, I've been paying, you know, insurance for how many years? I want the coverage. I want this repaired.
Not just a patch.
Yeah, not just a patch.
So, okay, let's say they will only cover just a patch. What's wrong with that? What are the issues?
Well, for one thing, to me, it drops the value of the house considerably because people will drive by. It's the first thing an eye goes towards is what the heck happened to that roof, you know? But, you know, now you're dealing with two different ages of roofs. And when you start patching, when you're peeling apart an old shingle, it's really hard to get it to go back as good as what it was before. And in most cases, you don't have a problem. If it's a good insurance company and it's someone you feel comfortable with over the years, they're gonna replace it. At least that whole section. But if they start talking patching, then you may want to say, you know what, wait a minute, I need to go somebody higher than you. Or maybe I need to go to the state attorney general's office because obviously, you know, when you pull out your paperwork, there again, you want to make sure that, you know, I want it replaced, not just patched, because you know it's a whole color thing, mm-hmm. and it's a cosmetic thing, and they'll say it's just cosmetics. Well, to me, I have some pride in my house. I don't want it to look like we just threw this thing together with some leftover shingles. Sometimes you have to stand your ground. A reputable property, you know, inspector or appraiser from the insurance company, when they come, a very reputable one has the company in mind first. I know. But they'll take care of you because they don't want to lose your business. I mean, there's a lot of insurance companies. You can always say, hey, I'll just go to somebody else. But you want to make sure that you had sometimes a roofing contractor there first or with you helping you. If you're not familiar with it and you don't feel comfortable, have that very reputable roofing contractor with you.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. He is here to answer your questions. So give us a call at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nevy. It's Home Improvement Day. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here with me, talking my ear off during the break.
Yep. And I got Kevin Nordmeyer. He's listening, so he's going to fill me in if I'm saying something wrong.
All right. And we are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And here's a question. I'd be interested in Bill's recommendations for the best gutter guards to install. I know this is something you have some strong feelings about.
Yeah, well, you know, I have a problem sometimes with a lot of the gutter guards or even gutters in some cases. But there are the ones that, to me, that I like the best, and it's just me personally, are the ones that kind of have a – it's hard to describe this, but it's kind of a slanted fin that catches the water and shoots it back into the gutter. So it catches the water even on a medium rain, I would say, and angles it back into the gutter itself. So some of the gutter covers are just a real simple cover with holes in it. To me, half the time, the water goes right across the top of those and over the gutter, and you didn't achieve a whole lot. Yeah, it keeps the sticks out. And in some cases, it holds the sticks because the holes are just the right diameter to hold a stick, and then it catches the leaves. You know, I like, if you're going to have gutters, you know, this is just my personal opinion, I would rather just have them open and then clean them. You can get attachments for power washers. You can get attachments for hoses. You can get attachments for leaf blowers. I know it's messy, but one other thing, too, is this kind of nice that if you do blow those out, and that way you know that the downspouts aren't plugged because you can have the gutters clean, but somehow over the period of time, maybe two or three sticks got in there or something crawled up into the downspouts and they're not letting the water out, is then I can visually see that the whole system is working. I'm also forced then to put the extension back on the gutter to get the water away because that's just kind of my biggest beef. We have this huge collection system, And we think that as soon as it gets down to the bottom of the downspout next to the house that it's away.
Gone.
It's gone right down there next to your basement and make it a wet basement. We've got to get this stuff away. And it seems like the more houses I go into, you know, they always say, well, at least make it a five-foot extension. Well, I think it ought to be 10 feet or I know it's awfully ugly, but, you know, even the black drainage tile, ADS tile, I call it, that we use around foundations, is just have some of that sprawled out maybe 10 to 20 feet and get the perforated so that it helps kind of soften the water flow so it doesn't all come shooting out the end of that and, you know, wash out your yard. You know, sometimes I think we have to look past cosmetics and look more at function. You don't like the look of the extensions on the gutters, but why have all the, you know, the gutters on the house if you don't have it getting away from it? The ones that I really like those because they actually catch the water and then the wind kind of blows the leaves across the top. And I can't think of the name, and I really shouldn't be giving a brand name out anyway. But that particular style, I don't like. Me personally, I don't like the screens. I don't like the plastic with holes in them. And
just say no.
Just say, yeah, I just, you know, and the other thing is if you're, you know, it gives you a chance to look at your roof, too, and make sure that everything is okay at the edge of your roof, that those shingles haven't been deteriorated from maybe some ice dams, that the fasteners on the gutters may have to go with a different fastener because now the gutters are pulling away from the house. It kind of puts you into a little bit more of an assessment of the overall system as well when you're looking at it.
All right. We have some emails, and you are welcome to join our conversation with your questions by email, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We've got phone lines open for you right now at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. Here's an email from Tom. He's just reinforcing what you said, but I'll read it anyway.
Oh, good. Tom.
Last summer, we had some hail in Ankeny. I had some neighbors down the block and saw they were having their roof replaced. I looked at my roof and didn't think it was too bad since it was only 2 years old. Then my next door neighbor, whose house is 6 months newer, said her roof was totaled. So I called a good roofing contractor and my insurance company rep looked at it and they said, yes, it was total. So I put in a new roof, paid extra to upgrade to a class 4. Mm. Bottom line is even if you think there's no damage, get it checked out anyway to be sure.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, that I'm glad Tom mentioned that because If your insurance company isn't repairing yours and you see somebody else's, you go, hey, wait a minute. You know, I don't remember seeing that line in the clouds out here.
Right.
He had the same hail that I did. He's like 200 feet away. So, you know, and if you're a big, you know, kind of a geek, I suppose, when you're watching the storm, you put on a hard hat, run out there and grab one of the biggest ones you have and say, hey, this is what came off my house. You know, I don't keep this hail around here for nothing. This is what it was. And, you know, that may be something else as well. Or take a picture. You know, I'd be mm-hmm. smarter. I don't know what else to think. But it's a lot more entertaining to watch your neighbor go out with a hard hat. Look at that moron. But,
no, that's a really great plan, Bill.
Yeah, thank you. That would be me out there in a hard hat getting bruised and beat up.
You wouldn't put on the hard hat.
That's why I have the bald spot. So, you know, take a picture of the size of the hail, too.
All right.
Yeah, there we go.
Here's an email from Brian in Iowa City. I have a question about renovations to basement support structures. I have a bungalow and have had contractors assess how to remedy a slanting floor on the main level. They've offered two different approaches and very different price points. Are there general questions you would ask contractors about their proposals for this kind of work or advice that you could offer a layperson on how to compare the plans?
Well, on a slanting floor, you know, first of all, I would ask that contractor to not just say how he's going to fix it. I want him to find out, well, first of all, what caused it. Because you may put thousands of dollars into leveling this floor, and over a period of time, it may just keep going. So you have to find the cause first. And when you're looking at something structural like this, it may be something simple, it may be something difficult. It really depends without seeing it. I do like to err saying, you know, let's have a structural engineer take a look at this. I know it's just a house, you know, and people just seem to think that, well, this is a house. What would a structural engineer be able to? Well, first of all, they understand it's a structure. That's why they're a structural engineer. It doesn't matter if it's a chicken coop or if it's a, you know, a 30-story building. They understand how different parts of the building move, what's causing them to move. So, if you have a, you know, access to a structural engineer, some of them may not do it, but some may, you know, do a small job like that and give an opinion. And then they may work up a scope of work that can be done. An architect as well many times can take a look at it, and they understand how all the pieces went together and what pieces are failing. You do need to find someone that understands that you can stabilize the floor where it's at and then re-level it somehow on the top. That could be done with myriad of different ways. You know, you can shim it up with wood. Some people will use lightweight gypcrete. It's kind of a cementitious type slurry, and level the floor up that way. But then you're adding weight both ways to the floor that may exacerbate what you have already. So, you know, that's where you need to have someone with a lot of experience. You just can't have some person that just builds garages all the time say, yeah, I can do this for you. It might be out there, might be out of their realm of expertise. But, you know, there are.
So try to find a structural engineer. But it sounds like also maybe get a third opinion.
Yeah, I get a third opinion because, you know, we always talk, especially in building science and energy efficiency, the house is a system. It's an old, well-worn term. But the house is a system. Whenever you change one little thing, almost always it affects something somewhere else. Because when you raise or lower or add weight, it puts tension somewhere else in the house that may cause, you know, hard to say, it may cause doors not to fit correctly. You know, it may cause drywall cracks. There's a myriad of things that could be happening. So this could be a really big deal. That's why you want to get someone that really understands how the bones of the house work and, you know, pinch points, leverage, things like that. So, you know, I would, before I spend a lot of money, I would get a structural engineer in because, you know, they're licensed and, you know, stamped and everything you could think of. But the nice thing, too, is you are going to have to get a permit to do this. And when you walk in with plans that a structural engineer did, as opposed to some guy that just builds garages. I'm not slamming somebody building garages, but maybe different, you know, out of the realm. But when you walk into a building inspector, say, I've had a structural engineer, that building inspector is just going to big sigh of relief because, you know, now it's not going to be up to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Next question, and you can join our conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. We've got some phone lines open for you right now. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. The number again, 866-780-9100. Here's an email from Carlton in Conroy. I have a two-story, four-square home built in 1910 in Conroy, Iowa. I've been told it's probably a kit home. The attic is a huge, wide, open space, which I would like to finish into living space. The roof is decked with 1x6 planking, plywood decking, with class 4 shingles on top. I'd like to have the underside of the roof deck spray foam insulated with 2-part polyurethane closed cell foam. The problem is the roof rafters are 2x4 on 25-inch centers.
Wow, okay.
I've been told by one remodeling contractor that I can't hang the required 2 layers of sheetrock, 2 layers as a firebreak under the spray foam, on the 2x4 rafters without potential structural failures. I contacted a structural engineer, and they quoted $5,000 just to review the situation. I'd like to find a structural engineer who has experience with these situations and doesn't believe the solution is to throw the entire lumber yard at the problem and who doesn't bust the budget just with their initial review.
That's a good point.
All right.
So. There are less expensive.
But clearly they've done their due diligence.
They've done their homework. You know, this is a good example of where the planning is going to pay off for him, because a closed cell foam in this application is very good. The problem is, like, those older homes, most of them are underframed, and that's why they have kind of a sway back look to the roof. If you're going to do anything to this roof, it's that roof is not rated, like, exactly like you said. It's rated to hold, basically. It wasn't, you know, they didn't have really ratings back then, but even if it is a kit home, they knew what it could carry. And what it could carry was the 1x6s or 1x8s, whatever these kit homes have a lot of times, and cedar shingles. So they had felt paper and cedar shingles, which are less weight than an asphalt, especially if he goes for the class 4, which is a heavier type shingle. So already the weight of what you have there is more than what the 2x4 really should be carrying anyway. And he's right. I mean, the on-centers things were really wacky back then. So, I mean, at 24, 25, it could be 28 inches, anything. So there's going to have to be additional framing underneath there if he is going to sheetrock this. And you are going to have someone that understands structural ratings. You know, you can get an architect in there. Sometimes you can. There are contractors that have design build services that are incorporated into their company, and sometimes that's a less expensive way to go. Of course, they don't have the additional training that maybe, you know, the structural engineer may have. But you may want to ask that of the company that he hires. Just say, you know, do you have a design build type abilities? You know, can you figure out the structure on this? And because he is going to need to beef something up, and this could run into a lot of money, because when you, there again, like earlier, when you add framing to hold the roof up, what's underneath it has to be able to hold that. So you have a load path that can go all the way from the roof to the foundation of
all
the
right.
house.
So there's not an easy way around this.
Usually not. Now, I know what some people have done in this case is they have just beefed up the roof, the center of the roof, the beam at the top, the ridge, and on a four square, it's a little tougher to do, but in some cases, what they'll do is they'll beef up the hip ridges, which are the corners. They'll beef those up, and then they'll use structural insulated panels, which are maybe 8-inch thick foam panels that will carry the weight from the wall to the peak. There again, by the time he's done, it's going to be a lot of money. So you're going to have someone that understands the structure. And the thing is,
but you think he could find somebody that's not going to charge him $5,000
yeah,
just to look at it.
Yeah.
So look around for somebody
yeah,
else.
You may not get it. You won't get as in-depth of a report. And, you know, you're going to have to really research and ask a lot of questions of what they're capable of designing. But if they just if this person just comes, walks up in the attic with you and says, yeah, we can do this and we can frame this and frame this, the first question you should be asking, okay, we're framing this, but where's the weight going? Because when a roof sags, it sags in the middle down, so it's arching down. You just can't push it back up because you're pushing against an arch. So you'll stabilize what you have and go from there. But first thing he's got to ask is, okay, what about everything down below? You know, where's the load path here? What's going to carry that roof? And in many cases, like I say, it depending on his house, it might cost a lot of extra money just to be able to carry the load.
All right. Let's go to the phones. Lori is on the line in Columbus Junction. Hi, Lori.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'll try to be really short.
Ah, that's okay.
I have a small house where it's a four-room house. The drywall tape is coming off at, like, where the walls meet and where the ceiling meets the wall.
Yep.
And I heat with wood, and I think it's just coming off because it's not in every room. It's only in the living room and the bathroom, which share a wall. And my son says it's because the house isn't plumb and it won't do any good to have somebody come in and retape it and mud it. And I think it's because of the heat from the wood stove. Can I have your opinion?
How old is the house?
25 years.
25 years? I tell you what, this is very timely because I was up, we were doing some training with Alliant Mid-American Energy and Cedar Falls Utilities in January. And one of the speakers, a friend of mine, he came down from Wisconsin, and he had this really cool picture of exactly what you're talking about. What he found out is with the temperature, you know, because warm air rises. So some cases
right.
with wood burners, you know, it may be pretty warm up there, you know, up in the ceiling area. And what was happening on the picture that he showed was there was moisture that was causing, you know, it would eventually cause the tape to let go, just like you're saying. But there was moisture right at that point where the wall, drywall and the ceiling drywall met. And what was happening was there wasn't enough insulation up above in the attic, above that point. Plus, what didn't have more of an air seal at that point. So what he found out was they went into the attic, and they went over to where the drywall meets, right, you know, under right where the roof comes down,
uh-huh.
bottom of the rafters, and they spray foamed that area. And when they spray foamed that, they made sure that the foam expanded down into where those two pieces of drywall met. And it was an amazing picture because there was just a little bit of gap when the installers put it up and then they taped it. But there was still a little gap on the top side. And when that foam went down, it air sealed it and then added insulation. And then they went back and that moisture was gone. So I would fix it from the top first, and then you can go ahead and retape.
All right.
But it's going to take a good foam installer to do that one.
Thanks a lot for your call, Lori. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back with Bill McAnally in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. He's ready and willing to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Jason is on the line next in Humboldt. Hi, Jason.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, we had a storm up here on March 6th. And went through Fort Dodge, Algona, Webster City, all that area. We had a lot of hail damage, so roofs are damaged, siding are damaged. My roof needs to be replaced, siding, all that. So you get a lot of contractors from in-state and out-of-state coming in and leaving flyers and things like that and bidding on jobs. And I was told, because I've been approached by one contractor that was willing to bid on the thing, and then he said he would also pay my deductible for my home insurance. Now, from what I understand is that's against the law.
You know, I don't know if it's against the law. I would think it would be, but I could see him maybe rephrasing that, but that seems, that seems kind of sketchy to me. I would ask that person, a lot of questions, like for, a lot of references, at least three of them. You know, their insurance papers, especially if they're from out of state. I don't even know if,
right.
Me personally, I don't know if I'd even hire somebody out of state. I want to keep the money local and maybe have to wait a little bit longer for somebody that's local. But, yeah, I would ask my insurance company right away, too, say, hey, what's the deal here? That seems really, that seems sketchy, doesn't it? I mean, that.
Yeah, it does. And from what I understand is I've heard it was against the law. Now, that's not coming from a lawyer or an insurance agent, but
sure. That's
what I had heard. But yeah, you've got a lot of out of state contractors coming up here and trying to bid on jobs. So
yeah, and that's a bad thing. You know, they do a job and if they didn't do it right, we don't have any recourse because we're not going to drive down to another state to find them.
Right.
Yeah. So that's why a lot of times it's good to just stay with local. You know, the other thing though is if sometimes when we have those, because I'm from Fort Dodge, went through there too, is we always have to make sure that when these contractors get the job that ask them, well, who's going to be the on-site supervisor, and is that crew that you've maybe subbed this out to, are they licensed? Who's going to stand up for the warranty here, and, who's going to be making sure that my bushes don't get, pounced on and then pick up the nails and, those kind of things, too. Those are some other questions. But, I'd be pretty nervous. I really would, Jason. I hope somebody would call in, and maybe an insurance person or something would call and tell us. But that'd be nice to know. Thanks.
Yep. Thanks a lot for your call, Jason. And so that is really something to be concerned about in the wake of a storm.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, I could see how that would go is say, give us $500 down and we'll make sure and get your money to you, right up front. Well, first of all, you don't want to give anybody any money down unless they're a family member or something. But that kind of stands out too, is when they want some money down to start a project. But the biggest thing is, well, you've got to make sure, get references, make sure they have all of their insurance papers in place and they're bonded and check with a Better Business Bureau, check with your insurance company, are these people on a list of some sort? And with the way the internet is now, they come up to you and says, the way to scare them away is I'd like to check on your criminal record, if they're going to be around, you may not be around all the time. You don't know what's going to happen. So today, we're a little bit more, not as trusting, I think, anymore.
With good reason.
Yeah, with good reason. You're right.
All right. Back to the phones. Doug is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Doug.
Hello.
Morning.
Yes. I've got a single-story ranch. It has some beautiful cement board on it, replaced wood. But what I'm noticing, especially in the June when the sun's hitting it directly, or in July when the sun goes down or goes up, the solar gain on this stuff is incredibly. It gets so hot. I checked it with an infrared thermometer, and it was running about 140 Fahrenheit.
Yeah, yeah.
Any suggestions for managing that?
What color is it?
Tan.
Like a darker tan? You know, the only thing I can think of is, you know, just to paint it a lighter color, and then, of course, then that, you may not like that, but it does absorb heat quite a bit, just like any solid. But, you know, one thing I'd be looking for, though, and I've just noticed it here personally, is how far away is the siding from the ground right now?
I'd say 6-8 inches.
Yeah, I'd be looking at that bottom piece right now and see if you're starting to see any kind of like a mildew growth on it. Take your fingernails or a small piece of metal or something, a feeler gauge piece of metal, run it along the bottom of that siding and see if it's starting to delaminate. Because what happens is when that siding, of course, any wood or cement board siding, when it gets wet or damp, that sun comes out, and the sun that you're getting, let's say 140 degrees, you know, what it's doing is called vapor drive. And if there's any moisture at all on the outside of that siding, especially in the morning from dew, it pushes that moisture into the siding, and in many cases it drives it all the way to the siding, and it'll drain out the backside. But I have noticed in some cases with the cement board that I've experienced with is it's made of layers. And it's pushed, vapor drive has pushed that moisture through the latex coating through the cement board, and it's getting to one of the layers, and it's causing some moisture issues inside the siding. So the closer to the ground it is, it's probably going to be able to wick moisture maybe from the bottom of it. I'd kind of go around the house and check that out. Now, I've replaced some of my cement board, and I've replaced it with, like I used LP. Siding, smart side, me personally, because it looked the same as far as texture. But I'd start looking at that. But, you know, that's the thing. A solid is gonna absorb the heat. But, that vapor drive becomes another issue. Is that on the south side?
East and west.
East and west, yeah. Boy, yeah, like this summer, that's where it really gets scary. In fact, I was on a project where it was the west side of a house that it was all brick. And it had been misting all day. The sun came out. That vapor drive from the sun hitting the brick on the west side pushed the water through the brick, and it actually came down the inside of the brick, found some holes in the foundation, and it's clear outside. And the customer had water running down his inside of his foundation wall because of that particular vapor movement. But yeah, the only thing it would be is a lighter color, but still it's going to be 120 probably. It's supposed to hold up. You know, I would get a hold of the company and ask them, you know, is there anything that I could do? But about the only thing I could think of is a lighter color, cause some reflectance.
All right, Doug, thanks a lot
for your call. That's a good question.
Here's an email from Clarence. We're looking to buy our first home, and one we're considering has anchored walls in the basement from 2013. The 1926 brick foundation is bowing in on one side. Is this something to feel comfortable with for 15 to 20 years, or will it need to be replaced?
I'd call the anchored wall company if it's that particular brand. That would kind of make me feel better about a house that age anyway, that the previous owners went ahead and stepped up and paid thousands of dollars to have this preemptive work done. So, you know, to me personally, it would be kind of a plus if you're looking at a home of that vintage. But I would call them and get the records on it, because they'll know what they had to do, what the pre-existing conditions are, and they may have a record of, they may have, you know, plumbed up the wall and got some measurements to where how far the bow was in at that time. You can check that now as to see if it's moved or if things have changed. And you can get them out there and say, okay, what do you think? Because this is the biggest investment of your life usually. So you want to cover all your bases. And I don't care if it hurts somebody's feelings or not. I want to know, you know, from the anchored wall people, okay, what do you guys recommend? That we're going to have to do more did you just do the absolute minimum? And is it you think it's going to keep moving? Because to jack that house up and throw another basement underneath it may be outside of his realm.
Right.
He could also use it as a, you know, as a tool to drive the price down to cover more work. And that's another thing is if you get anchored walls in there now, they'd be able to say, okay, to make this right, this is what it's going to cost. And then you can go to the person you're buying it from and say, okay, here's the bid. Drop the price this much, and I'll take it.
All right, so it doesn't necessarily cross the house off the list, but you've got to do your homework to make sure.
Because, like I say, it's kind of to me, it's kind of a plus. At least they just didn't leave the
right.
the bowed walls. And, you know, these companies do – the ones that I've been around, they do great work. I mean, the ones that I've seen, they're just – yeah, they've saved a lot of houses.
All right. Fred is on the line next in Grinnell. Hi, Fred.
Hi. Had a wind here roughly a week ago, about 80 miles an hour, and a branch broke off of a dead tree south of the house and punched a hole in the roof. Got the branch out. Should I put a piece of metal on the roof temporarily or –
Well, I'd get it as fixed as soon as you can. I actually, a couple days ago, cut a hole in a roof, and I'm waiting. I should have done it yesterday, but there was too many good TV shows on, so I'm just going to wait till after this rain to fix it. But I, yeah, just, if you put some metal flashing, the thing is, if you put some metal flashing just to cover it for now, just make sure that flashing goes under the shingles up above. And do you have three tab shingles or?
Three.
Yeah, just make sure
they're
that
getting
that
old.
Yeah, then there you may have to take a hairdryer up there to get those things to move enough to slide flashing, you know, up so it goes underneath those gullets, and so that you know as right. the water comes down that it lands on the metal and goes over the hole. But I'd fix it as quick as possible.
Be a good idea to put a 5-gallon bucket up there where it might drip into.
So if you could, yeah, I've done that too.
I don't have any valleys; they're all just the opposite of valleys on all four sides. So,
see, I know my dad. What he used to do is he'd go to the old Walmart or Kmart back then. He'd get an inflatable swimming pool and he'd blow into that thing and stick it underneath the hole, and he didn't have to get to it right away. They'll usually hold a few
like
rains, so. There you
that
go.
Sounds like a good Bohemian trick.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah, yucks you much to you, too.
Yeah.
Big check, do you? Anyway, enough beachy hovno if you don't know what that means.
No, I don't. No.
That relates to a bull.
Okay.
Or some of the BS that the politicians are keeping around.
All right, Fred.
Bye.
All right, well, have fun with the roof.
All right, thanks a lot for your call. Sabina is on the line next in Ames. Hi, Sabina.
Hi. So my husband and I were thinking about trying to do an off-grid house about 8 miles out of Ames. And we were looking at things like compressed earth housing and, some earth berm housing and things like that. And I just didn't know for all of those kinds of factors if there was a spot for bid sourcing for contractors or people who would let you work with them on that in the area regionally, you know?
Yeah, there's you could check with, well, actually, Iowa State University and the Center on Sustainable Communities have partnered together. I think they're officially ramping that out in the beginning of April. But you can get a hold of Iowa State Extension, and, you know, you can get information there. But I would also look at over in the Fairfield area. The Maharishi University over there has a lot of information of work that they've done. Iowa State University has in the past, some of the architects, hopefully they haven't all, the architectural instructors, they all haven't retired. But, you know, I was on a project where they'd looked at doing rammed earth and things like that. The Iowa Energy Center may have some information for you. But, you know, just directly you know, Googling, you know, whatever, you know, especially like a rammed earth design or building off grid, you know, passive house design, Googling topics like that. The one issue, though, that I had run into a long time ago is when we were doing energy efficient housing back in the 70s is if you're going to borrow money, if you're going to run it through a bank, you were pretty much, you better have cash to cover what you want to do because appraisers are not going to appraise the house for anywhere near what you have in it because there's nothing for them to compare it against. So, you'll be very disappointed in it because there is a green building addendum that they can use, but it's very hard when you go radically outside the regiment. That's kind of what home building is right now. There is a lot of information on off-grid housing, you know, on the internet. You want to make sure that it's specifically for Iowa, but it's. You know, there are some builders in Iowa. I check with Center of Sustainable Communities first because they have a kind of a source list. But you're going to have find someone that really buys in to the efficiency side of it, understands the building science side. They may be able to do certain parts of the house. There's a lot of good solar contractors in Iowa right now. But you're going to find some of the key to this whole thing to make it, you know, net zero or net zero ready is you're going to have to find someone that understands the building envelope. We do have a problem with our energy codes. They're trying to water them down right now in the legislature to make them even dumber than they were before. But we're trying to make them better. But you want to find somebody that builds way above energy code levels and understands moisture, vapor. You're going to have to do a lot of interviewing to find someone in Iowa that can, you know, like do the whole thing from beginning to end.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the issue. I mean, is actually finding you can find all sorts of information on the internet, but it's hard to find the people who actually have the knowledge locally or any experience.
There is a builder in the Ames area that I know of. You could contact if maybe I can get a hold of you after the show today.
Yeah, we'll take down her number.
Yeah, get your number and I can call you because I do have a friend that's capable of doing this. I'm not trying to push anybody's business, but I know that he's, you know, can do this kind of work. But it's very hard, like I say. But the thing is too, because I can remember going to a bank we were going to do an earth berm home one time, and, well, that was gone.
You just couldn't get the funding to do it.
And I can see both sides because if something, you know, catastrophic happens, who's going to buy it? There's very, very, very limited number of people that want to buy that type of house. You know, I would, but somebody else may not.
Okay. So even though that's probably beginning to shift, this is becoming more common.
Thankfully it is.
You're still a pioneer, Sabina.
Yes,
all
you
right.
are. Yeah.
Thanks a lot for your call, and we are out of time.
Jeez.
Bill McAnally, thank you so much for being here
today.
Well,
thanks for having me. It was a good day today. Thank you.
Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, comes by just about once a month to answer your home improvement questions. Talk of Iowa is produced by Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. You can get in touch with us anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We're on Twitter at IPR Talk. I'm there too at Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.